The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You are listening to the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Rumors are heating up. We're coming up on the winter meetings, which will take place in Orlando on Monday. Lots of action typically goes down that week. Not so much for the Red Sox always, but for Major League Baseball, typically a lot of signings and trades will happen. I did see, I forget who reported it, Kyle Schwarber is expected to be the first one to come off the board. So we'll see if that happens. Basically saying it could happen before the winter meeting. So maybe someone will drop a bomb on where he's going to end up. So I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Doug Aitchison, Chris Felico. Is it snowing yet up there or no?
It tried to early in the morning, but then it just turned to rain.
We got about 5 inches today.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Which part of New York are you in?
I'm in Orange County, New York, which is right on the border of Jersey and Pennsylvania. So I'm like west.
Jersey and Pennsylvania. Okay. Yeah. All right. That's interesting. All right. No snow for me down here, Myrtle, but it is cold, though. Yeah, I needed a jacket today. I've been triggering the Bresbians all day, if you haven't seen. just going off. Shocker. What a group of people, I'm telling you. I don't know of a group of people that love mediocrity and not winning so much. It's just...
I don't know. The Bluminati was right there, Terry.
Well, I think part of these guys are, from that faction. Not all of them, but yeah. Yeah, you guys weren't here in 2023. Man, those were some times. But, all right. So, not so shockingly, over the weekend, Sean McAdam from Mass Live in his Sunday column, I think it was, kind of dropped a nugget that sources close to him are saying that the Red Sox are expected to go over the luxury tax, but not by much. So in other words, if you want Kyle Schwarber and Pete Alonso in the same winter, not happening. And I'm not saying we expected it to, but the bar isn't set high is what I'm saying. We're not going all out. So Chris, what were your thoughts on that?
It's not shocking. It's not shocking either that it came from McAdam. I mean, he basically has just got an AirPod in his ear, I'm sure, with John Henry just whispering exactly what to type in these articles and just being a vocal piece for John Henry in the front office at this point. I look at Sean McAdam. I respect, the career he's had, but he's part of the problem with a lot of the Boston media who just is reluctant to challenge or criticize or critique anything that the Boston Red Sox do. And it's why podcasts like us exist, because someone has to at least critique the absolute nonsensical bullcrap that happens with this organization that we love. It doesn't shock me. All it does is spell is, first of all, it gets everyone thinking, well, are we operating at a loss? Because that's part of the factor of this whole thing. And I think, I don't know if the Red Sox, I don't know the financials. Everything that I've seen based off of the research that we've done would suggest that's not the case. But if you told me they were operating at a loss, it wouldn't shock me. There's organizations that are more successful than the Red Sox that are. And that begs a whole different question of, how you should run a professional sports team, whether it's at a loss or not. But to expect the world from this team regardless whether they're making money or losing money, I think would be foolish at this point based off of the evidence and sample size that we've gotten over the last half decade. So not shocked. Long-winded answer. Sorry, Terry.
Oh, good. Doug?
It feels basically like that is like John Henry's a drug dealer. The Red Sox are his drug, and he's giving us just enough to stay hooked, saying, yeah, we'll go over, but we're not going to go way over. We'll keep you hooked. And, I don't, because now I'm excited to see at least that. I mean, I want to see, at least going over, I feel like, is a step at least in the right direction. And if that's true, if this reporting is true, then I'm excited to see what's going to happen starting Monday. And not that I have total faith that that will happen, but I mean, I'll take it. I'll take it he has no reason to lie, or I believe what he's saying, and so we'll see. I mean, I'll take it.
Terry, before you say anything, Doug just made me think of something.
Yeah.
It is interesting how the Sox seem to do this every offseason, where they drop something that makes us think we're about to splurge and go all out, and then it's absolutely ominous doom and gloom based off the first move, and you're like, God, we're getting nothing. And then you get a little bit of, you're not getting nothing. And then now, at this point, anything that happens, we're going to be excited because we expected nothing. And it's just so cyclical. But I like the drug dealer analogy, Doug, because it's pretty accurate. Thanks. Sorry, Ken.
So, I mean, it's a weird thing to try to process here. And I posted something on social media, on Twitter, I should say, X, whatever you want to call it, where a Forbes article revealed that the Red Sox profited $120 million in 2024. And they were the most profitable team in Major League Baseball. And so where I'm confused here, and I'm not an accountant, and math isn't my best, as we've come to know over the years. The payroll in 2024, that was the year we only signed Lucas Giolito, as Craig Breslow's first year in the organization, was set at $225 million, and he was capped at that. And they revealed that at the start of spring training. And so if we're only $20 million over that at the first luxury tax threshold, how are we operating at a negative? I mean, because by my math, you're still profitable by about $100 million if you're comparing it to 2024. So where did all that money go? I don't understand, really. And what I also find interesting is the timing of this disclosure, because the sky was the limit like 2 weeks ago. We hadn't done anything yet. We're expecting a big winter. Breslow made some comments after the World Series that, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to try to address some needs. And, then the Sonny Gray thing happens, and then the narrative starts to change a little bit. 50% of the fan base, I'm going to say, didn't like the Sonny Gray trade. I'm in that 50%. But there's 50% of the fan base that think he's going to be adequate. It's going to work out. And maybe it will. I mean, I'm not always right, as we know. But it just seemed like things kind of started to go a little bit sideways because of that in terms of the narrative. And then the McAdam thing comes out. Oh, whoa. We don't have as much money as you guys think. And so now we kind of set the bar low by getting Gray. And I don't know how you're going to get that big bat. If you're $20 million under, it's probably going to cost you $30 million to get that person. So I don't see how it's all going to work.
I guess the question too is what's way over, right?
Yeah, let me get the thresholds up real quick. I know this year it's at 244, and I was pulling it up actually. So where are we right now? Every episode I have to do this because I don't remember. So we are at 224 right now, actually. So we're 20 million under the first threshold. And I don't know. So anyway, so in terms of that, like in terms of the timing, like what was the plan all along is what I'm getting at. Like what were... And maybe the question isn't what was the plan, what were their expectations?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know what the thing is that there's never an actual number set to anything other than the fact that we know what the cap is, we know what the thresholds are, but there's never a concrete number that comes out. I mean, outside of, like you said, when Breslow first got here, and it's always after the fact, but there's never a level of transparency of, well, this is where we're going to be. There's just words like little, over, and things that give us these ideas of crumbs either way. You know, I'm seeing a lot of comments here from our followers as far as the Sox funding pretty much everything that Fenway Sports Group has, and it got me just quickly looking because I'm interested in seeing if that's even, you know, there's any validity or possible. Because the truth is, Liverpool FC is the most valuable asset that Fenway Sports Group has. It's worth $5.4 billion. The Sox valuation is 4.5. The interesting thing, though, is that Liverpool's profit and loss from the same season that you just said, Terry, they lost $57 million. And the only other big asset as far as a team itself that Fenway Sports Group has is the Penguins, and I know that they operated a loss. So if we were, let's say, $140 million profitable and Liverpool lost almost 60 and the Penguins are probably losing somewhere close to that, then it could make sense where we look at the profitability of the Sox as, oh, well, we're making money. But as a group, you're almost close to breaking even at that point, not counting all the other things that Fenway Sports Group is involved in. And that's not necessarily fair to the Sox, and it shouldn't be the point, but it's a reality for our team because they are a part of a portfolio. You know, I mean, John Henry at one point bought this team with the hopes of breaking a curse. Now the reality is it's cash flow to a business venture. And that's where we're at this point.
So the second luxury tax threshold is $284 million. So that's 40 million above the first threshold. And then going above the third one, there's only a $20 million gap. So that's 304. So the thresholds are 244 for the first one, 284 for the second one, 304 for the third one. So I don't know how close they're willing to get to that. McAdam made it seem like they want to be closer to the first one than the second one. So I don't know how you get there. And that's not the only problem we're having. So another report came out today. I don't know if you call it a report, but an article by Jeff Passan and another ESPN writer. Forgive me. I forget who he collaborated with, but apparently, when it comes to trading Jarren Duran, the Red Sox are expecting a bigger return. Like they think he's far more valuable than what he really is. So their expectations aren't, you know, don't seem to be realistic. And it's been my suspicion all along. I've been talking about it for the better part of a month now. I think Breslow's biggest weakness is navigating trade markets. And I think we're seeing that right now with Duran. I don't think he has the first clue on how to execute that trade.
Well, I think it's been a problem for the Sox now, and this stems even back to the last regime in the front office. as far as overvaluing the talent that we have. You know, the article says that he's valuing Duran closer to the game win player that he was in 2024 versus the 4-game win player that he was in 2025. And I mean, that would make sense as far as why, you know, it might be difficult for him to navigate these things, because if you overvalue your talent, you know, the rumors that we heard when there was speculation of Joe Ryan at the last trade deadline was there was a possibility of people basically picking up the phone and laughing at, you know, what we're offering. And I think he even had a quote that, like, yeah, we could trade for anyone, but the other team has to like our players. And if the other team doesn't like our players as much as we like our players, Mr. Breslow, then it's going to be hard to navigate these types of trades. So I think it's a mixture of fundamentals, opinions on evaluating talent. And then, yeah, I mean, let's just face it. His social skills reek of just an inability to communicate in an effective manner, where he's going to be able to navigate and wheel and deal on trades in the MLB market.
He's like a car salesman that sucks at selling cars.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's like. It's a very good analogy, because it doesn't seem like he's a guy that's going to go get into the GM, you know, in a room with GMs and work guys over on a trade. Right, that's definitely not going to happen. And I'm not surprised about Duran's value in the league. I mean, I think we're all trying to get rid of him for a reason, and other GMs see that, other teams see that, and he didn't have a great year. And I don't know. That doesn't surprise me at all. I don't think that there's a big value out there for a guy that's looking like he's on the downslope of his career and had the best season of his career already.
I just feel like realistically he should probably be in a 1-for-1 deal, you know, and we need an infielder, and I think that's the most creative way to go about that. Go find a team that has a surplus of infielders, and we'll deal them Duran from our surplus of outfielders. I think that's the logical way to do it. And preferably a player that's not under a big contract right now, you know, maybe similar to Duran, maybe they're ARB1, ARB2, and solve the problem that way.
I mean, I could see Duran being the potential quote unquote headline of a trade for, you know, assuming you throw in the right pitching prospect for a number two, depending on who the team is. You know, another thing that I saw today, and I forgot who posted it, so forgive me. I might even been Cotillo, or he might have been the, well, not the one who reported it, but he might have posted it. But there was a sense that if the Sox were going to be able to get two big bats, they almost have to trade for Joe Ryan because of the fact that his contract and what he makes at this point. Now, like you said, and I don't think any of us are expecting to get two big bats, but the fact that everything hinges on trading for a controllable asset that's not making a lot of money for the next season or two is absolutely crazy. I know it's a reality, but it's crazy if the Sox are even close to making the money that we think that they're making, removing all the other aspects aside. But yeah, I think obviously a Duran trade, if you're not throwing in a prospect, yeah, find a team that has a surplus of infielders and make that deal. I think that's a no-brainer. But the thing is, do they look at it that way? And it's clear to me at this point, based of all the rumblings and indications of how they value Duran, they don't. Which is a problem. I think, you know, Breslow, Heim Bloom, and a lot of MLB executives, but specifically those, because that's been the last half a decade for us, it's like this paralysis by analysis. They analyze all the stuff and they get so fixated to the point where they overvalue our talent, and we end up doing nothing with them. And then it gets to a point where it's absolutely too late, and then you're forced to do something and you get nothing back. So it's absolutely asinine at this point.
You would think Abreu has more value, right?
Yeah, I would say
back-to-back Gold Gloves, younger.
I would just say because of his upside is not the diminishing value in the foreseeable future. You know, Durant, to me, he makes the most sense for a team that needs to win now. Yeah. And is on a cusp and fringe World Series because, you know, what he brings to the table is going to be a value for at most the next 2 to 3 seasons at a very high level. Whereas Abreu has more upside, hasn't necessarily tapped it, but if he does even meet 65, 70%, 80% of what people thought he could be, I mean, that's something that could be good for the next 5 to 6 seasons, you know, barring injury, of course.
I just, if Breslow can't find a way to trade Durant, there's a million ways to fail this offseason, you know, by not addressing the pitching, not addressing the bats. Trading Durant should be really easy. Finding a dance partner and simply addressing a need. That should be an easy move for Breslow to make this offseason. And if he does not make that move because of paralysis analysis, because he's afraid to, you know, he's afraid to make a ballsy move, that's the ultimate indictment for this guy. It should not be hard to move Jaren Duran.
No. And it should be a priority at this point, I think, to move him.
100%. And the thing is, though, if I'm thinking the way that John Henry has been operating and what he cares about, people like Craig Breslow are the perfect operator for this team because he's not going to go for it. He's going to get stuck and he's not going to make moves. And people like that aren't going to accrue crazy money on the books. In fact, when they get forced to basically take your big contracts, like a Rafael Devers, and trade them, they're going to get back little to nothing. And even if they do take on a bad contract like a Jordan Hicks, that pales in comparison to what he just offloaded. I mean, he's honestly the perfect operator for this team, for John Henry, because he literally can't screw up what John Henry's trying to do, and that's not spend the money that he should be spending, because he's not going to trade contract. Like, Jaren Duran's not making a lot of money, so he's not going to trade someone who's not making a lot of money for someone who is making money. So that's a net win for John Henry. He's not going to go out there and sign people because he's basically handcuffed in doing that. And then he's not going to go swing for the fences and give out money. I mean, even the extensions that we signed, like, they're reasonable MLB contracts relative to the talent that he has signed. And I commend him for that. But I mean, what is the sense in doing that if you're going to withhold all the other, you know, resources that we've allocated or should be allocating to talent? It makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense, like Terry's saying, that you just trade Duran for a guy that's gonna play, an infielder that's gonna help us right now. That should be a priority. And then the Willier trade, like, because I don't think Duran needs to be a trade where you're like, oh, we fleeced this team, we got back all this. You just need a serviceable guy that's going to help you in the infield. And I think the Willier trade's a little different, that Willier can be the guy that you're throwing in with a bunch of prospects to make a big splash trade.
Let me ask you guys a question. Oh. Who is a guy that you would try and trade straight up for with Jaren Duran? And then the other question I would have is, out of Willier, Abreu, and Christian Campbell, because one of them has to be left field at some point long term, if you're getting rid of Jaren Duran, I'm sorry, center field, whatever you want to say, who has more value in headlining a big deal, like you just said?
I would think Willier. I mean, he's back to back Gold Glover in one of the hardest positions, you know, one of the hardest places to play. He's shown that he has pop in his bat, and he's young.
I'm just pulling up.
Right. I mean, that's what I would think. I mean, Duran has proven, you know, he's had a better season than Willier's ever had, but I don't think he's going to do that again.
Who would you trade Duran for straight up if you could, Doug, while Terry's pulling that up?
I mean, if a Kettle Marte is like available, like if that's,
well, he's available. Like that's already kind of well known. There was an article that came out today, in fact, that Sox were one of the teams attached to him as being in the hunt. But I mean, we're in the hunt Kings, so I'm not necessarily too concerned that we're going to execute that. But
I mean, I would love that.
I would agree, even though he's 33. Yeah. If you're getting rid of Duran anyway, it's what we need.
Yeah, we're not looking for – we don't need a long-term guy with a Duran trade. But he's a good player right now. And he'll probably hit – you know, he's got a couple – athletes are aging less and less as we see. Like, people are playing a little bit longer than they used to. You know, 33 isn't the 33 that it was in the 90s.
Yeah, with conditioning, right?
Yeah.
Duran is controllable for 3 more years. Abreu is controllable for 4. So you'd have Abreu a little bit longer, but I think Duran is still the more valuable guy because typically he's hit lefties okay. You know, he was hitting them at like a 265 clip, not a ton for power. All of his power comes against right-handed pitching. But you know, the threat on the bases, I just feel like there's that upside. Willier hasn't truly broken out and he's never hit lefties, but he hasn't really been given the opportunity to either. And I kind of think that ship might have sailed at this point. You know, I mean, he's going to be ARB1 next year. So I think Duran is probably, he's the sexy name and he's a proven leadoff guy. That's another thing. It takes the right personality to bat first every night. And, you know, Willier projects more as a 4 or 5 hole hitter, I think on a lot of lineups, but as a platoon guy. So, you know, if you're looking for an everyday bat, I still think Duran at the moment is a little bit more valuable. And he's a little bit older too, which might not sound great, but the one positive thing, if you want to frame it that way, is he's not going to command a Kyle Tucker type deal.
Right.
By the time he hits free agency at 32, 33 years old, he was a late bloomer. So he'll be a guy that's relatively cost controlled. When I think of infielders right now, the one that comes to mind is Ketel Marte. And I don't think a 1-for-1 move kind of does it at this point. If it's the Diamondbacks specifically, I think you'd have to throw in a pitcher.
Yeah, probably.
One thing you could do, you're really eating away at your depth at this, but they lost, Merrill Kelly to a trade. He was going to be a rental anyway, going into the free agency, but they don't have him anymore. They don't have Zach Gallen. He's a free agent this year. Maybe you could send a Patrick Sandoval type guy over in that trade, assuming he's going to be ready. We don't know that, but the expectation is more likely than not he'll be ready. You could attach a Cutter Crawford type guy to that deal. You know, they're going to need pitching. So you send Duran and one of those two guys, if maybe even both, if it gets it done. But you'll finally have a second baseman who can play second base and, you know, hit at a good clip. That's one of your bats. Yep. You still need another one, but
that's a good deal.
I would do it. Yeah. I would, 100%. I would find a way to get that done, but he's up against a pretty shrewd GM and Mike Hazen, who spent several years with the Red Sox. He was the number 2 under Dave Dombrowski for a little while before getting the Arizona job. But we need to get creative, and I don't see Breslow doing that. And when you look at the Sonny Gray trade, I hate it more and more every day. As every day passes, I just find more and more reasons to hate it. And part of the reason why I think he did it was because it's a low-risk thing. I mean, You know, it's kind of like the Dustin May deal without the payroll implications. You know, it was a low risk deal. You couldn't really lose it. It was probably a long shot that we were going to win that trade. But with Sonny Gray, I mean, he's a relatively marquee name. You're up against Heim Bloom. Not the shrewdest guy so far. He'll have a chance to flip that narrative here in the coming years. But it was just a safe, low risk trade that really wasn't courageous at all.
Yeah, I think what you were just saying about the Ketel Marte trade. I don't even think you'd have to send Cutter Crawford. I think Patrick Sandoval, that elk of pitcher is all you'd have to because of the money. I really think that the Diamondbacks are looking to move him because of money at this point. And because Jarren Duran is so controllable and at a reasonable cost, I don't think you have to give away Cutter Crawford. Because to be honest with you, I don't even know. That would be like the top person I would give. I'm certainly not giving any of the young arms, and I don't want to start getting into someone better than a Cutter Crawford, because I truly believe unless we go out there and get that true number two, which I'm not holding my breath for, these young guys and the guys who are quote unquote proven commodities, like a Houck who's going to be hurt and not pitching, a Cutter Crawford who's coming back from injury, we're going to need him. I mean, Cooper Criswell might be the other name that I would throw in there where it's like, all right, well, if you have to part with someone, maybe a Cooper Criswell, but even then we might need him.
Well, I think to get a Ketel Marte guy, I mean, you're going to have to get a little bit uncomfortable, maybe. Here's the thing, though. Chris Cotillo pointed out he thinks it's maybe 50-50 that we get an impact starter. But how are you going to do it with only $20 million to go before the next threshold? And I know they're going to cross it, but that big bat's going to be a huge chunk of that. I don't see how you get a number two starter at this point. And I don't, as much as I hate Sonny Gray, I think as far as the rotation goes, you've made your bed and you got to lay in it and just hope it works out, because the resources you have left have to be for two big bats. You need two at this point. So I don't want to add pitching at this point to not adequately address the hitting. I think you're just leaving yourself wide open for another season of probably not a lot of power, not a lot of home runs, a lot of platooning, which no World Series team was ever built that way. And I don't think any team ever will. So I just don't see how the pieces are going to fit here. And you just shouldn't have traded for Sonny Gray. Let's just say you traded for Joe Ryan. He's only $7.5 million. That's $14 million cheaper than Sonny Gray, and affords you a lot more money to address the offense. So I don't think we're going to get a Joe Ryan guy, because we just would have done that to begin with, and not taken on Sonny Gray, who's probably not going to pitch well at Fenway Park with a 91 mile an hour fastball and the 6.84 ERA he has over his career. I think that was a dumb move. I think it was a dumb move. And if Breslow had the, you know, I had a tweet earlier, the market perception, the player valuations, the people skills, which is very important if you're a top executive, and the courage, I think he would have got a Joe Ryan type guy.
Yeah, well, it's going to be hard to get a Joe Ryan with, if he's acting this way about Jarren Duran.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean.
Like, I can't even imagine what he's valuing our prospects, who will have a 70% chance of never becoming anything, if we're all being realistic. And that's any prospect. It's not just the Sox. But yeah, the only other way that we're able to, you know, execute and get these bats, and again, you want to talk about having to navigate and wheel and deal and have the ultimate people skills to pull this off, is somehow getting Yoshida off the books, getting him in a trade. I don't see it happening, but that's literally, other than getting Joe Ryan in a controllable pitcher, the only financial way you make this work where you could still accumulate bats, two of them, is you have to get rid of Masataka Yoshida's contract.
I don't think it's possible. I mean, if you could get someone to take a third of the contract, I think that would be a really positive thing. But you'd have to attach a big prospect. I mean, last year when Casas still had value, he hadn't blown out his knee yet, Breslow tried to trade Casas to the Mariners. But the, you know, one of the big stipulations was they had to take Yoshida too. And Jerry DePoto said, nope, we're not interested. And, you know, he's another really smart executive that I'd love to have. That guy, all he ever does is make trades. And, you know, and they got one game from the World Series this year, finally, put it all together. But I just don't feel good about Breslow. And he has to know his ass is on the line. If he botches this winter, no one's going to care that we snuck into the playoffs last October only to win one game. No one's going to care about that.
No, I mean, I think. I just lost what I was about to say. Hold on, it'll come back. But
yeah, it happens to me all the time.
Yeah,
but he's playing checkers when everyone else is playing chess, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that I see a lot of comments as far as Craig Breslow doing this wonderful job of off seasons and whatnot. And listen, has he gotten better? Sure. Here's the reality. We went home because Roman Anthony got hurt. And we still may not have won that series with Roman Anthony. Let's all be honest. There was no guarantee. But this much I can tell you. If you're worth half a shit as a front office baseball executive, your rookie right fielder getting hurt should not be the reason why you can't win a playoff series. A wild card series against New York Yankees, who were not that good of a team. Yeah, they could have won the division, but they didn't win the division. And once they faced Toronto, we all saw what happened. And yeah, I know there'll be a bunch of people out there who go, well, if the Yankees lost Aaron Judge isn't a rookie right fielder. He's the best damn baseball player that may have ever lived when you look at the regular season statistically. That's the reality. It shouldn't take Roman Anthony ending your fucking season. Excuse my language.
Yeah. And so it came back to me. When you were saying I feel like he feels like his back's against the wall right now, right? Like this is the season where why I feel like a little optimistic that we are going to sign someone is I think like win or lose, like good or bad, he's going to take a swing this offseason to get someone to maybe get the media off his back a little bit, to get the fans happy. Like, I feel like this is kind of a do or die situation for him. And he might just feel cornered and just take a big swing.
I agree with you fundamentally, Doug. That's pending.
Yeah.
That there's not conversations with John Henry approving of this. Because if he's behind all right. this, it doesn't matter. Because the media, which John Henry also owns, and is very fair yeah. when it comes to critiquing the Boston Red Sox. In fact, they do none of it for the most part. It doesn't really matter. The truth is it's us and people like us that are doing most of the critiquing. But yes, at face value, everything you said is 100%. And like, I'm still confident that something's going to happen. Is it enough to really pique my interest and make me feel good and cleanse my palate? That's where I start to get a little bit iffy. But yeah, I do agree. I think something is going to happen. And listen, I hope I'm wrong. There's no one that wants me to be wrong more than anyone. Same thing with Terry. Terry says it all the time. Terry hopes he's wrong. Unfortunately, we just haven't been wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I took a shot at the Brisbians in the Open, and typically we're on the right side of history, you know, and it just hasn't been a very good history in the last 7 years or so. But I think the Red Sox and Breslow, I think he knows what the number is. Maybe it's 250. Maybe that's the number he can't cross. Maybe it's 255 million. I think he knows where he's at right now. Like, they've had meetings with ownership. So I don't know. I just don't know how he's going to make it all fit right now. It was just really stupid to take on 20 million for Sonny Gray. There were better moves out there. And two of the three big bats are Boris guys. It's gonna, yeah. I have no idea.
If they go out there and do what they should do, the Sonny Gray trade is great. But more than likely, they're not going to do what's necessary. And that's where I pause and I say, yeah, it's not a great trade. Because he's not a number two pitcher. And we were all clear. Craig Breslow was clear on what this team needed. Not threes, not fours, not fives. And I'm sorry. I don't care what anyone says. Sonny Gray, based on his history at Fenway Park, okay, is closer to a three, four, or five than a number two for a playoff, no, a World Series contending team. And that's what we should be going after. Because I agree, there are moves that have been made, whether it's bringing up the talent and the prospects to the major league team and some of these contracts and trades panning out in the last year, that have put us in a position now in a weak American League to compete for a World Series, at least in appearance, maybe not necessarily a championship, but you got to take baby steps at this point.
I think we're crawling, but I don't know. We're just all on this ride and we don't know what the destination is, but yep. I guess we'll just wrap on that. I would be shocked if a big move doesn't happen before Sunday. And I would expect next week. We've been doing about two shows a week. I'm guessing there'll probably be maybe three next week as some of these names come off the board. Hopefully we're going to make some moves. There's definitely going to be some moves in the division that impact us. So we'll just kind of take it as it comes. So we're just kind of on call every day and we'll be here to address it as things go down. Everyone take care.